Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is January 26th, 2026, or it is the 5th day of Adar, 2026, or it's January the 26th, 2023. Down at the cross, down at the cross where my Savior died, down where for cleansing from sin I cried. There to my heart was the blood of Christ. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. For to my heart was the blood applied. Glory to His name. I am so wondrously saved from sin. Yahshua so sweetly abides within. There at the cross where He took me in. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. But in my heart was the blood of Christ. Glory to His name. O precious fountain that saves from sin, I am so glad I have entered in. There Yahshua saves me and keeps me clean. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Hath in the heart was the blood applied. Glory to His name. Come to this fountain so rich and sweet. Just now for soul at the Savior's feet. Plunge in today and be made complete. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. Glory to His name. That in my heart was the blood of Christ. Glory to His name.
We're going to go into our second part of our study today, two timely greetings, number 45, entitled What is Christianity? This is going to be part two. And we'll start it with this song, and then we'll have a prayer and go into our regular study. At 16, we're going to now go into a little review. For the apostles were rewarded in having their names engraved on the foundations of the holy and eternal city, because they counted not their lives dear for the gospel's sake, Revelation 21:14. Luther became the father of the Protestantism for esteeming the Reformation of the greater importance than his own life. Henry Ford became the richest man in the world in his time for trying to do for labor and for the poor masses of the world more than did all of his competitors. Thus rises the great pyramid of the historical fact that the men who have made the great success of life are those whose efforts have been centered not in the selfish interest but in the blessing of others. No one has as yet been able to change this law. Why should we then play the fool by trying to change it? Whatsoever your aim in life may be, if you want success, then let your efforts be directed for the good of humanity rather than for the good of the self. For the Asher's own admonition is, seek ye first the kingdom of Yahweh and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. This is where we left off from our last study, so now we'll pick up and start anew now. It says, brother, sister, no longer be heathen or Gentile. Be Christian through and through. In other words, be ye followers of the Yahshua 100% through and through. Be not like the self-centered, the proud, and the worldly minded, for the competitive way ends in the fool's paradise. It is the highway to hell, shun it. Ponder the terrible pronouncement against the greedy shepherds of the day. Ezekiel 34. And now turning back unto Isaiah 58, we find that when the Christianity fully awakes unto this great necessity and does something about it, then promises the Yahshua, or the Yahweh, let's call it the Father, it's Yahweh, shall thy light break forth as the morning. Thy light break forth as the morning. We're going to do a study on this word called light, L-I-G-H-T. We're going to find something very interesting that we may have noticed before. And thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee. For the glory of the Yahshua shall be thy reward. Then shalt thou call, and the Yahshua shall answer, the Son. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, here I am. If thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, the putting forth of the finger, and speak in vanity, and if thou draw out thy soul to the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted, the soul, then shall thy light rise, and the obscurity, the light, rise, and thy darkness be as the noonday. And the Yahshua shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in the drought, and make fat thy bones, and thou shalt be like a watered garden, and like a spring of water, whose waters fail not. Isaiah 58:8-11. Now, the manifest truth is that if the time should last, and if we are to stay in the pathway of the true Christianity, where the light shines, then all must do something about this badly neglected work of caring for the needy. For it cannot be accomplished from one central location, but must necessarily be located into every state and country, wherever the message of the hour takes root downward and bears fruit upward. Isaiah 37:31. Okay, it says, then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came unto me. Matthew 25:34-36. Our duty, though, is for the heeding not only of this injunction, really all that inspiration has set before us, Job 32:8, 2 Timothy 3:16-17. All of it must become a part of our beings, as does the food we eat, if we are to enjoy all of the Yahweh's promises and to become heirs of the kingdom eternal. This is the bright side of the picture. But sadly, there is also the dark side. Close up in the foreground is the patriarch's lot. His selfishly choosing for himself all the fertile land of the plain and leaving the barren hills for his elderly uncle Abraham did not yield him the fruit he expected. Even though he prospered for a while, yet when he was finally through with Sodom, he went out the poorest of the poor. Genesis 19:15-17. For the Pharaoh and his great men endeavoring for the keeping of the people of Yahweh in the slavery forever were engulfed by the Red Sea and buried alive in the midst of it. Exodus 14:22-38. For the cheating Naboth out of his vinegar, and for the taking his life, Ahab, king of the Israel, and all of his household, died at the edge of the sword. 1 Kings 21. Those who cast the three Hebrews into the fiery furnace were themselves destroyed by its flames. Daniel 3:22. Just as those selfish, greedy, cruel men who threw Daniel into the lion's den were themselves finally devoured by the hungry beast, Daniel 6:24. Human, wretched gallows upon which to swing more to chaos, but ended up swinging upon them himself, Haman, Esther 7:10. For the taking unto himself the glory and the credit for his great speech, Herod was eaten by the worms. Acts 12:26. For the price of a few paltry coins, Judas betrayed his master unto death, and then mocked to madness by that woeful wage he turned upon himself, the greedy and the treacherous hand which took it, and therewith brought himself to an accursed and violent end and a pauper's grave, even before the Yahshua was nailed on the cross. Matthew 27:5, Acts 1:18. Indeed, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Revelation 13:10. Thus, the immutable law of the retribution still exacts an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Oh, so verily true. Whatsoever one sows, that shall he also reap. Genesis 6:7. These outstanding examples merely touch the scroll of history. Thousands of others might be added, to say nothing of the countless unrecorded ones since the dawn of time. Thus, in this all-revealing beam of the heavens' great searchlight of the truth, are clearly set apart the two ways for the travelers, for the false way, pretentious and loose and broad, which the many are traveling, unto destruction, and the true way, unpretentious and straight and narrow, which the few are traveling unto life. With both ways now standing flooded with the light from the beginning unto the end, the traveler is able to see the entire length of each way, and therefore to know what to expect by the traveling the one or the other. Why not, then, choose to go the way which leads to life, security, and happiness, and forever shun the one which leads unto sorrow, poverty, and death? Why longer fool oneself in the venturing for the obtaining of Yahweh's faithful promises by the running from a low here to a low there, from this quack to that one? Why not go after life's blessings in Yahweh's way? If all of the Yahweh's ways are contrary unto the man's, but if they were not, how much better would they be than our own? For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, says Yahweh, Isaiah 55:8. Finally, matured Christianity is in the image of Yahweh and His people. When they are full grown, when they are gathered one by one out of all nations and brought into their own land, Ezekiel 34:11-13, where and when their blood is cleansed, their stony hearts taken from them and hearts of flesh, with the law of Yahweh engraved their own, are given them in the victorious and jubilant exchange, when they all know and serve the Yahweh, declares the scripture, a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. Ezekiel 36:26-27. Thus it is they are then and there made ready for the translation, which now will it be with us, the ways glorious or inglorious of the serving Yahweh and others, or Satan and self. For the serving Yahweh and mankind is noble, but to serve Satan and self is base. Shall we not then gladly choose for the feasting on the Yahweh's butter and honey, so that we may know the difference between the good and the evil, and learn for the choosing of the good and for the refusing of the evil? Shall we choose to be spared from the destruction and to be taken into the glorious land? For the Yahweh forbid that any turn down His most gracious invitation. It is now up to each to either take a hold of or to miss what Christianity has for him. Now, this is E.T. Hall talking way back there many years ago. And about 70 years ago, he says, I plead with you to make it your chief business to obtain the promised blessings, that you may escape the destruction of the wicked, of the unbelieving and doubting, and be left forever to enjoy the promise. And it shall come to pass that he that is left in Zion and he that remaineth in Jerusalem shall be called holy, even every one that is written among the living in Jerusalem. And there shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the day, time from the heat and for a place of refuge and for covert from the storm and from the rain. For the Asher shall comfort Zion, he will comfort all her waste places, and he will make her wilderness like Eden. Okay, so we're going to have a wilderness that we just came out of down at Kermit, Texas. It's truly in the wilderness here of Texas. We were out there in among the sand dunes, and we call it the Shinri, the Shin Oaks that made the little acorns that the little, some of the animals eat them, and mesquite bushes that grew, the mesquite beans that the cattle eat and made them real fat, high protein diet. Right out there in the desert, right out there in the wilderness. And her desert, like the garden of the Yeshua. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody. Therefore the redeemed of the Yeshua shall return, and come with the singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their head. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and mourning shall flee away. Isaiah 4:3. Isaiah 51:3-11. End of time of greeting number 45. That's two times of greeting. We have plenty of time left on this study. So we go out to the next two times of greeting number 46. And the title of that sermon, the Beachy Hollis gave on April 22nd, 1950, was the gift of miracles. And I wrote a song, Yahweh give me, heaven give it to me. It's called Miracles. It says, Yahweh is full of miracles, surprises are no less, and blessings that come in. This guy is filled with happiness. Open up your heart today, let the sun shine in. A happy camper is the one who has Yeshua and Yahweh as his friend. Okay. Especially the healing and speaking in tongues. When, how, who? Never before was the doctrine of the miracles, especially of the tongues, and of the healing, so variously agitated, urged, and practiced as it is throughout the Christendom today. Yet never was there greater doubt as for the genuineness of the manifestation, and when confronted by the agitators of these miracles, those who do not believe in or accept them, nor possess their power, resort unto the saying just about anything and everything they can think of in their effort for the countering of the phenomena and to comfort themselves with the limited spiritual attainment. For the clearing away of the smoke which has has resulted from this fiery issue between these two hostile camps of the Christian, and to expose the truth on the subject which the master enemy has so completely covered up, is the inspiration's purpose herein. Basic unto a right understanding of the entire subject is the fundamental fact that on the day of the Pentecost, the disciples truly spoke in all of the languages of the people that were then present. And these people come from Southeast Asia, all over Asia Minor. They come from where the original seven churches were located. And that was those that found in Revelation 1, 9 to 11, those seven churches of Laodicea, of Asia. From this biblical point, no one can diverge or yet believe the record or know the truth that it contains. And when the day of the Pentecost was fully come, they were all with the one accord in the one place. And suddenly there came a sound from the heaven as of a running mighty wind. And it filled all the house where they were sitting, and there appeared unto them cloven tongues like as of the fire. And it sat upon each of them, and they were all filled with the Holy Spirit, and began to speak with the other tongue, as the Spirit gave them utterance. And they were dwelling at Jerusalem, Jews, devout men, out of every nation under heaven. Now when this was noised abroad, the multitude came together and were confounded, because that every man heard them speak in his own language. And they were all amazed and marveled, saying one to another, Behold, are not all these which speak Galileans? And how hear we every man in our own tongue, wherein we were born? For the Parthians and the Medes and the Elamites and the dwellers in Mesopotamia and in Judea, that's the house of David, tribe of David, that's the tribe that we're up today, and Cappadocia and Pontus and Asia, Pargia with Pamphylia and Egypt, and in the parts of Libya about Cyrene, and strangers of Rome, Jews and proselytes, priests and Arabians, we do hear them speak in our tongues the wonderful works of the Yahweh. But folks, that's in Acts chapter 2, verse 1 to 11. Now this is going to be repeated here in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in today. Just exactly the way it was done then. You're going to have people that's going to have the gifts that's going to give them on the antitypical day of Pentecost again. We're going to have to wait for it, but it's going to be the house of David that's going to be in charge of this here receiving. And then passing on to all these others that I just read to you about. So it says, although this subject is confounded by controversy, yet there stands forth out of it the indisputable fact that regardless of anyone's claims, no other sect of people since the miracle endowed the disciples passed away and possessed the gift which all of the 120 received on the Pentecost. Hence the plain truth is that that gift subsequently lifted its wing, as it were, and departed from among men, as really as did the disciples themselves, and that never since that day has it re-manifested itself. But it's going to re-manifest itself right here in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now, in the house of David. It's going to be Zechariah 13, that whole chapter said that, in that day there shall be a fountain open for sin and uncleanness unto the house of David. Would any take issue with this assertion? Then all that is necessary to discredit it is for them either to open their mouth and speak the languages of us all today, as the apostles spoke the languages of the people in their day, or to produce the historical record of such a manifestation since then. But in the continued absence of such evidence, what then? Will this gift ever re-manifest itself? If so, when? Why not now? in order satisfactorily for the answering of these questions, we must first consider the conditions upon which the early disciples of Yahshua received the gift of the miracles. For the only similar condition will bring the similar results. First of all, every one of the disciples, it will be remembered, came unto one accord, Acts 2:1, before they received the gift, before the Pentecost, though, they were jealous of one another and were designed to excel one another in the position, prestige, and all else. Christendom today is even worse off. In fact, it is worse than at any other time. Never before has there been such controversy, such wrangling, such accusing and damning, and trying for the exalting self and down the other. This is not in the particular with regard unto the fact that one's sect disagrees with another. For all know that were there no difference, there would be no sect. Rather, what is of the special concern is the fact that scarcely even two individuals within one sect agrees on all points of the teaching and practice. And besides being rife with the dissensions, divisions, and bigotries of every kind, every denomination in Christendom is, in addition, shot through and through with every other spiritual ill. And who can deny it? Long before these sad conditions developed, Yahweh forewarned that men would fall asleep and let the devil sow his tares among the wheat. Matthew 13:25-28. For how long until the harvest? And in the time of the harvest, saith Yahshua, this is Yahshua the Son talking, I will say unto the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, and burn them in the bundles to burn them. But gather the wheat into my barn. Matthew 13:30. His barn is the kingdom that is set up of Daniel 2:44-45. Since it is therefore strictly biblical that the Yahweh will not bestow the gift of miracles upon a people other than those who as a group come unto one accord, who come for the seeing eye to eye, Isaiah 52:8, and since the Spirit cannot affect this unity and harmony now, while the tares are co-mingled with the wheat, then all might as well reconcile themselves unto the educative and redemptive discipline of the waiting on Yahshua until the harvest, until the tares as the discordant or the false ones are purged out. Those who will not wait but are impatient for the possessing of the power right now for the working wonders will beguile themselves with a spurious gift. And I've already had that happen with the man that I brought in 1981, Verlis Johnson. He was Ellen DeLong. He was Verlis Johnson's secretary for 20 years at Kermit, Texas. He had a business degree from college. And he was a very gifted man. He paid 20% tithe. He believed in all of it. And Yahweh blessed him. Blessed him 20% worth, too. Okay, it says, bent on having the gift of miracles, working power that is being acclaimed rather than the gifts made available for the hastening of the harvest. They satisfy themselves with the counterfeit which is current, just as the Pharaoh satisfied himself with the counterfeit serpent, which his great men brought forth against the serpents of Moses. Exodus 7:10-12. If these counterfeit miracle workers and miracle hunters of the day will not repent themselves of this folly, then they will have to pay the penalty for playing the fool. What then is the truth about this gift? Are we to understand that the gospel work will close without it? For the inspiration does not remain silent on the question, but as we shall see, makes plain that the gospel work will never close, the harvest never be garnered in without a worldwide manifestation of the gift of the miracles, including the gift of the tongues. But you may say, if the angels, not men, are to separate the good from the bad and thus end the harvest, then of what use and benefit will the gift be unto mankind? If there are no souls to save, after that, it is precisely here at this clouded point in the way that the church needs light, lest she blindly plunge on and lose her way in the dense darkness ahead. To get into the full beam of the light, we must first face the fact that the pre-Pentecostal harvest took place in a self-deceived church. The Jewish, that was the tribe of Judah in charge of the church there on the Temple Mount there in Israel, 2,000 years ago, Pharisees, for the Jewish and through miracles working power manifested by Yahshua himself, for he yielded the 120 disciples, the first fruits of those who are to be resurrected, whereas the most Pentecostal harvest took place among the nation, and through the miracle power manifested by the spiritual filled 120 disciples. He yielded an innumerable multitude of converts to Christianity, Acts 2:41-47, for the second fruits of those who are to be resurrected. Now, for the summarizing of the task before the Pentecost, number one, the first fruits were numbered. Number two, they came exclusively from the church itself. Number three, the miracles then wrought were by Yahshua himself. Now coming unto the types after the Pentecost, number one, the second fruits were not numbered. Number two, they came from the nation. Number three, the miracles then wrought were by the numbered ones, the 120, the first fruits. Accordingly, the antitypical pre-Pentecostal harvest takes place in a self-deceived church. To let us in, the house of the Yahweh. And through the miracle working power manifested by heaven itself and the angels, Matthew 13:39, it yields 144,000. The first fruits of those who are never to die, whereas the antitypical post-Pentecostal harvest takes place among the nations and through the miracle working power manifested by the Spirit filled 144,000, it yields the great multitude which no man can number. Revelation 7:9. For the second fruits of those who are never to die. This same truth in the different aspects is figured forth in the Daniel chapter 2 prophecy. He says, a stone was cut out without the hand, which smote the image upon his feet. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And in the days of these kings, that's the ones that we are in now, in this, the 12th parabolic hour, shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom. Actually, it's the Yahshua, the Son, is going to, Yahweh the Father has created for this purpose. He said that his Son there in Hebrews chapter 1 is the heir of this whole earth and all things. And he's taking possession of it. Shall the Yahshua of the heavens set up a kingdom, and it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hands, and that it break in pieces, the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Yahweh hath made known unto the king, which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof is sure. Daniel 2:34, 35, 44, and 45. What smites the image? Is it not the stone which the Daniel revealed is symbolical of the kingdom of Yahweh restored? Also keep in mind the fact that the image is not smitten by the stone until after it, the stone, is cut out of the mountain without the hands, and that afterwards it grows and fills the whole earth, thus in turn becoming a mountain of itself. And the elucidation of this truth, the prophet Isaiah adds, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Yahshua's house, let's just call it the mountain of the Yahweh's house, the Father, shall be established in the top of the mountain. Okay, so the mountain of the Yahweh's house then would be the house of David, the kingdom of Judah. Yahshua sat upon the throne of it, and shall be exalted above the hill, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, come ye, let us go up unto the mountain of Yahshua, unto the house of the Yahweh of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Yahshua from Jerusalem. Isaiah 2:2-3. Thus as the stone supernaturally cut out of the mountain supernaturally turns into another mountain, then fills the whole earth, it reveals that the process of the prophecies turning into the history, that the stone, and that it is to grow, is the symbolical of the first fruits in the kingdom, that the infant kingdom begins with the 144,000 servants of Yahweh, Revelation 7:3, and consequently the church of the Laodicea, and that it is the last in which the wheat and the tares commingle, and therefore the one in which the wheat, representing the 144,000 first fruits, is harvested. It is necessarily the mountain out of which the stone, as the first fruits of the kingdom, is cut or taken from. Furthermore, it is seen that they're being cut out without the hands, without the human aid, obviously points out the fact that they are guarded by the angels, that they're increasing. Then, as the growth of the stone reveals, is the result subsequently of the gathering of the second fruits out of all nations, causing the mountain or kingdom to fill the earth, and that this supernatural work of the cutting out of the stone, of the separating the 144,000 nucleus of the kingdom, is the purification of the church. Finally, the stone, as has been seen, is cut out, the nth cut out, as the infant kingdom set up in the days of these kings, the Toe King, not after their days. And since the 144,000 servants of Yahweh stand on the Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1, it conclusively follows that the stone kingdom in its beginning is set up in the Holy Land, while the Toe Kings are yet in existence. Beyond question, therefore, the 144,000 dollar servants of Yahweh, Revelation 14:5, composing of the government of the Yahweh in its beginning, for the stone which smites the image, and which subsequently becomes a great mountain that fills the whole earth, are instrumental in the eventual overthrow of all earthly governments. Overflow of all earthly governments. According, therefore, of who else at that time in all of the world, and who else indeed but themselves, could it be written? They are men wondered at, a great people, and a strong. There hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even unto the years of many generations. Zechariah 3:8 and Joel 2:2. And the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of the many people, as a dew from the Yashur, as the showers upon the grass, that tarrieth not for man, nor waiteth for the sons of man. Thine hands shall be lifted up upon thine adversaries, and all thine enemies shall be cut off. For the portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the... Let's do that again. And the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of the many people, as they do from the Yahshua, and the showers upon the grass, that tarrieth not for man, nor waiteth for the sons of men. For thine hand shall be lifted up upon thine adversaries, and all thine enemies shall be cut off. For the portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. For the Yahshua of the host is his name. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and will with thee will I destroy kingdoms, and with thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider. With thee also will I break in pieces man and woman. And with thee will I break in pieces old and young. And with thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock. And with thee will I break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of the oxen. And with thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers. Micah 5:7-9. Jeremiah 51:19-23. Who would dare question that in the prophecy these are the people and this is the congregation of Israel that completes the work, the house of David, tribe of Judah, with Yahshua sitting upon the throne of this here, of this kingdom with a little stone hewn out of the mountain without hands, Daniel 2:44-45. Yahshua sat upon the throne of David, his earthly father David, conducting and directing the work and leading out of this great army that he's accumulating along the way. That sitting upon the throne is found there in Luke 1:32-33, 31-33. And it's in Isaiah 9, verse 6 to 8, there's a prophecy on it. Who would have questioned that in the prophecy of Isaiah 9, 6-8, and Luke 1, 32 and 33, are the people, and this is the church that completes the work, the house of David, the only people and the only church, that's the fifth group of laborers that are called a labor in the vineyard, the last ones, they're in Matthew 20, verse 6. Also, that are called at the end of the 11th hour for the working in the 12th hour that we're in right now. Elijah David is the one that this truth is unfolding to. So that's why we know we're the head of this great prophecy that is to meet its fulfillment with us. Who would dare question that in the prophecy? These are the people, and this is the church that completes the work. As the only people and the only church that will possess all the gifts of the Spirit, that's from the gift of prophecy unto the gift of government and gift of miracles, that these gifts are given them for the achieving of their crowning work of lighting the earth with the glory, Revelation 18:1, of the preaching this gospel of the kingdom in all of the world for a witness unto all nations, thereby giving Yahweh's people as a sacred fruit, tear-free for my people out of Babylon, Revelation 18:4, out of every nation, kindred, tongue, and people whom the Babylon rules, for they bring their brethren into the purified church, the house of David, kingdom of David, Daniel 2:44 and 45, which is the kingdom of heaven set up on earth. The Father was the one that authorized this to be set up by his Son, by that little stone being hewn out of the mountain without hands, that strikes the image on its feet and grows into a mountain and fills the whole earth. That's what we're talking about here. Out of every nation and kindred and tongue and people whom Babylon rules, they bring their brethren into the purified church of the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2, 44 and 45, Isaiah 6, 19 and 20, the kingdom of Yahweh on this earth in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now, in this infant restoration, prophetically envisioning in the long ago, this glorious day of the triumph for the people in the church of Yahweh and for the everlasting gospel, inspiration jubilantly declared, mighty miracles were wrought, the sick were healed, and signs and wonders followed the believers. Yahweh was in the work, and every saint's fearless of the consequences followed the conviction of his own conscience and united with those who were keeping all the commandments of Yahweh, and with the power they sounded abroad the third angel's message with the last two joining it, the fifth and the fourth, Revelation 7, 1-4, and Revelation 18:4. The fifth angel swells the third angel into the loud cry that is given by this evangelical prophesying kingdom of the David. And in these days shall man seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them, Revelation 9:6. For the swords that were raised for the children of Yahweh's people broke and fell as powerless as a straw. Early Romans 2:85. Thus saith the Yeshua, I am returned unto Zion. This is the Son talking now. And will dwell in the midst of the Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called a city of the truth. Now this is actually the new Jerusalem. That's what we're possessing right here. This covenant Yahweh made with David back then, he said that he's going to raise him up in the last days, his kingdom, and called it the New Jerusalem, and the mountain of Yahshua the host as the holy mountain. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come for the seeking of the Yahshua the host and this New Jerusalem, and for the praying before the Yahshua. Thus saith the Yahshua the host, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take a hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take a hold of the skirts of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that the Yahshua, the Son, is with you. Zechariah 8:3, 22 and 23. Thus the illuminating and the tongues question, Zechariah's prophecy reveals that in the gathering time, in the time when the Yahweh himself called the church a city of the truth, a holy mountain, the time in which nations go forth for the seeking of the Yahshua and for the inviting others to come with them, then it is that the whole church, whole congregation of the David, this purified everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44 and 45, every active soldier in the army of David will have the gifts of the tongue. That's because in the gospel army, well, that is the good news, that's preaching the good news, the plan of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant army, will have the gifts of the tongue, as is pointedly indicated by the affirmation that 10 men shall take a hold of all the languages of the nation. For the universal significance of this number is confirmed by the 10 toes of the great image of the Daniel 2, by the 10 horns of the beast of Daniel 7, and of the Revelation 13:1, by the 10 servants in the parable of the 10 pounds, Luke 19:12-25, and by the 10 virgins, Matthew 25:1-12. Who are symbolical of the whole church, while the 5 wise virgins, the wheat, symbols of the 144,000 purified church, and the 5 foolish virgins, the tares, are still commingled. In all these, as in all other instances, the number 10 is numerically symbolical of the universality, just as conclusive as is the Zechariah's prophecy on the genuine gift of the speaking and the tongues are the Joel's, Michael's, and the Jeremiah's. Okay. Early writing and the Revelation prophecies on the other gifts of the miracle, including immunity to death, to be manifested among Yahweh's people. Continuing with the Joel's prophecy, we see the gifts are bestowed on both and young. Be glad then, you children of Zion, rejoice in the Yahweh your Father, for he hath given you the former rain moderately, and he will cause to come down for you the rain, the former rain, and the latter rain in the first month. And it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my Spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions. Joel 2:23-28. Here too, in the plainest terms, is set forth the truth that after, not before, the former and the latter rain, both of which are figurative of the freshly revealed truth, coming directly from the throne of the Yahweh, preceding the harvest, during the time of the great harvest, during the gathering of the people, these gifts of the miracles will be restored. For the result of the Yahweh's restoring them is graphically pictured by both Isaiah and Micah in their almost identical words. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Yeshua, of the house of the Yahweh, which this mountain is the mountain of David, which Yeshua the Son sitteth upon the throne of David in this mountain. So, but in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Yahweh the Father, by his Son, shall be established in the top of the mountains. His Son Yeshua is going to establish it in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow under it. And many nations shall come and say, come and let us go up unto the mountain of the Yeshua, and unto the house of the Yahweh of Jacob, and he will teach us of his way, and we will walk in his paths, for the law shall go forth to Zion, and the word of Yeshua from Jerusalem. Micah 4:1-2. In addition unto the testimony of the types here, from the mouth of at least 7 witnesses, John, Micah, Joel, Daniel, Zechariah, Isaiah, Yeshua himself, is the more sure word of the prophecy, revealing the set time for the gift of the miracle. In the summary, their faithful testimony is that the re-manifestation of the gifts among them will be, number one, after not before the latter rain is poured out. Number two, after the stone is cut out of the mountain. And not before. And number three, the time when the Yeshua is gathering the second fruits from the east and from the west, number four, when Zion and Jerusalem are called a city of the truth, as the mountain of the Yeshua of the host, as the holy mountain, holy kingdom, number five, when the inhabitants of the one city shall go unto another, saying, let us go speedily for the praying before the Yeshua and for the seeking of the Yeshua of the host, I will go also. Let's read that again. Let us go speedily pray before the Yahweh the Father, and to seek his Son Yeshua of the host, whereat in that holy mountain in New Jerusalem, in the land of Israel, I will go also. Thus the Yeshua will free his people from both sin and sinners, keep them apart forevermore, and endow them with the miracles working power. Does he do this because they have been good, or for his namesake? Here is his own answer. Well, this brings into us, this is our contest, this is at the 11th hour call, that's number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
Don't let that ship sail by, buddy, Elijah David.
Don't let the ship sail by while standing on the shore. Captain of that mighty ship is standing by the door to welcome all to come aboard. There's a room for many more. As the ship sets sail for the harbor, lights up that far off distant shore. Don't let that ship sail by. Don't let that ship sail by. He has a pain of for the liberty in the sky, for the saints of all ages are riding her on high. So don't get caught standing there when that ship goes sailing by. Oh, dreamed of lighted harbors, silver ships in the sky, and a wind of thunder sailing deep as that sweet dying light. Yes, a dream about those mansions Yah has gone to prepare, and a wind of thunder making lovelies in the air. Don't let that ship sail by. Don't let that ship sail by, for she has a payload to give her in the sky. best of all ages, her right in her own heart. So don't get caught standing there when that ship goes sailing by. Girl, let that ship sail by while standing on the shore. Cover up the tide, it's good for many more. For the captain of that mighty ship is standing by the door. But a welcome all come aboard destination and shore.